Welcome to Next Step Student Success, a podcast on tips, tools, and takes for academics, presented by the Office of Academic Engagement at Norfolk State University.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Felicia Mebben, one of your co-hosts for the Next Step Student Success podcast. And I am here with the other co-host, Mr. Malik Watkins. Hi, Mr. Watkins.
Hi, Dr. Mebben.
So today we are excited to have as our guest, Dr. Dennerson. And I'm not even going to say more because I have questions so that he can introduce himself. So first of all, Dr. Dennerson, where are you from?
Originally from Roland, North Carolina.
So where is that?
It is right there at the North Carolina, South Carolina line, what we call where you start entering into the low country of South Carolina is what we call it down there.
Closer to Charlotte or the other side, closer to what's over there?
The low country is the coast, like closer to the Myrtle Beach area.
Nice. So I'm from Greensboro originally.
Okay.
And I grew up near Asheboro, where the zoo is in North Carolina.
I love the zoo.
Mm-hmm. It has grown tremendously in the last, few decades. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your academic training.
This may be a little much for our Norfolk Spartans, but undergrad, I went to North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride.
Aggie Pride. Both my parents graduated from A&T, so Aggie Pride as well.
Yes. For my master's program, I went to University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, Midwest, and I kind of hung out in the Midwest for a little bit, and I went to get my doctorate at University of St. Thomas in Minnesota.
Okay, and what were your degrees? What were the focus areas?
Okay, so my focus areas are social work, clinical and administrative macro practice.
Okay, but and your undergraduate degree, was it also in social work?
Social work, concentration in education, schools.
Okay, great. So tell us a fun fact about yourself.
I like to travel. Is that a fun fact?
Okay, only if you tell us an interesting place that you've been to.
I think one of the most interesting places would have been Belgium. I think I'm a history buff. So like the old architects and things of that nature was very interesting.
Nice. So was there any particular reason you went to Belgium or?
It was actually some of my fraternity brothers. We traveled just to get away for about 2 weeks and see the country. So we tried to do different things like that just to get away, take a break. So it was just, for me, it was just learning the history. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, it's amazing to be in other cultures and you realize, oh, everything's not like America. Okay, good. We can learn some different things.
Not to dive too deep into it, but I heard you say fraternity. So you were, some of you were initiated at A&T?
No, actually, but I am a member of Kappa Psi Fraternity Incorporated.
We talked about the benefits of fraternities, just in case, and sororities in one of our recent episodes, so.
Oh, yeah. An important factor.
There you go. And engagement. Student engagement is something else.
Student engagement.
Yes.
Malik can relate to that as a single man, I see.
Tell us about your position here at Norfolk State, what your role is, and also how long have you been here at Norfolk State, and do you have any previous connections to Norfolk State before? It's sort of all rolled into one. Tell us about Norfolk State and the connection. What brought you here? How long have you been here? That type of thing.
Okay. Thinking about that, I think I'm going to be going into year three, I believe. Yeah. it's when I got here and I just started off working and running, I kind of forgot like how long I'm in here as well. But let's see. My position here in the Ethel Strong School of Social Work is I am the BSW field director for the undergraduate program and assistant professor. So what does that mean for non-social work majors is that I kind of direct the practicum experience for all undergraduate students that are social work majors. In the field of social work, you have to complete a practicum in order to validate your degree. So I work with all the seniors, which is amazing, before they graduate and walk across the stage. And what brought me to Norfolk State was the HBCU experience. I was working at a PWI prior, and I wanted my career to take off at an HBCU. I was like, if I'm going to be researching and publishing, I'm like, I want that to be tied to an HBCU. That was my connection to Norfolk State. Now, in undergrad, I came to Norfolk State some years ago for an event. It was a Sigma Gamma Rho party at the Armory. That was way back in the day from campus. And I was on campus and tour, and I was like, oh, I like Norfolk State. It's like, it seems pretty nice. So I did come to Norfolk State prior to, that was like when I was in undergrad, but everybody had those experiences. It was interesting then.
Nice. You were like, let me not say too much.
It's an undergrad experience, right?
So just for one little technical thing, what is a practicum? Because I'm not sure if everybody is familiar with that word.
And you're absolutely right, Dr. Medman. I'm using my word alphabet and for that's germane to social work. So practicum, in short, is where our curriculum and internship come together and we get practicum. So students have to apply and demonstrate their knowledge. And they do that in their practicum where they are evaluated by the 9 core competencies in social work. And it determines if they have mastered the skill to become a generalist social worker. So that's kind of what our practicum experience is.
Nice, thank you.
So Dr. Dennison, I don't know if you quite remember my face, but I was very much, when we were looking up who to invite, I told Dr. Medman, and we were scrolling through the social work faculty, and I was like, I remember him. I went to, for those of you listening, I went to the 17th annual Male Empowerment Conference at Virginia Union University. We did not know Dr. Dennison was going to be there. We were there to enjoy the conference. And when we seen the list of speakers, we were like, oh my God, there's somebody from NSU going here. Because they were trying to send us into a separate room. And we were like, no, there's NSU here. We're going to go watch NSU. So could you remind me and then anyone listening what your piece was on? I'm assuming you were, if I'm remembering correctly, you were presenting some research.
Absolutely. And I do remember you guys. You guys packed my room, packed the room for me for that conference. So the piece that I did that year, and I just completed a part 3 this semester. So I did a piece on African-American men in social work, some of the barriers for Black men receiving their graduate degree in social work. So that was the part that you listened to was when I was focusing on the curriculum. Ways that the curriculum may impact the learning of a Black male. I did a 3-part series to that. There's the one that I'm discussing the curriculum. Other, I'm talking about research experience where I interviewed African-American men and kind of culminate that experience of, hey, these are the factors, some factors that are prohibiting us to attract more Black men to complete their graduate degree. And then I just recently did an autoethnography, which is going to be published, yay, coming out soon on my experience experience in learning and matriculating to get my doctorate and master's degree. I write about that experience and it's a counter story research method. And then I have another colleague who I practice with, and she writes her experience from a mother of a Black male, as well as from what she observed me in my doc program. And so I know it's like, this is kind of heavy, but I kind of correlated that together and wrote an autoethnography piece. And it is going to be coming out pretty soon. And I presented on it actually this last week. So that was the first time I did that piece. So I'm pretty excited about it. It was an emotional piece.
But yes, it wasn't heavy. It was your passion. So that's good. We understand. And while we're on the topic, you talked about African-American males and some of the obstacles, if you will, that they face obtaining those degrees. Let's talk a little bit more about that, but let's bring it a little bit around. Because, you know, we're dealing, our audience is more so undergraduate students, but we also, you know, target anybody who's in education. What do you think are the biggest obstacles facing students trying to obtain their degrees, but specifically African-American males?
Great question. So when I wrote this last piece and I just did a presentation, audience was not social work. And I always don't like my audience to be individuals from the discipline of social work, because it's important that we talk about this subject. But it's relatable to if you're in business or other disciplines, but some of the factors that come up in my research is, let's just talk chop shop, like I'm in class with my students. Let's just talk plain without the technical words. So visual, seeing someone that looks like you. Speaking for myself, I know I did not start seeing an African-American male until I actually entered into high school. I had one male teacher that looked like me. And when I went to A&T, it was like a shock. I was like, whoa, we are here. We can do this. Like, oh my God, there's some more people here. I'm just like, so the actuality of seeing is an inspiration within itself that lets you know that, hey, I can do this. You know, having someone to kind of encourage you or tell you the do's and don'ts. And then another thing that I brought up in research is the curriculum. Our curriculum has to be inclusive. And sometimes, like when I was speaking about in social work, the curriculum kind of put Black men in a negative light and not inclusive. So those are some points that I spoke about that I still talk about. And there are a couple others.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned some great stuff, especially about seeing people. That hope is very real, especially, you know, being African-American males, especially if you come from low income communities or a family like that, to see somebody doing the stuff that you aspire to do is definitely hopeful. It makes you want to do it. It gives you more purpose, if you will, in your walk. And that's a great thing. I'm glad that you were able to attend HBCU. And although some people don't attend HBCUs, they get those experiences elsewhere, or they may come back and work at an HBCU like Dr. Mevin did. But seeing people like you in these, especially like me, so I'm in politics and working on campaigns and things of that nature. Too often, I'm the only African-American male in the room, and I'm also the youngest person. And I get both sides of that. So I get I'm surrounded by people that look nothing like me. That's the first part. And then the other part is I'm the youngest. So for some odd reason, somebody else in this room thinks I'm not deserving of the opportunity I've been given. Yeah, though that's, you touched on some great stuff right there. I'm getting a little deep in it, but yeah.
No, those are, you just added on, seemed like you must have read one of my articles, because I do talk about those same exact things. Because most of the time, well, currently now, I'm the only male administrator in the School of Social Work. I'm one of the youngest Black males that in administration in social work. And for my doc program, I was the first Black male to go through there. So I know about the word first. Sometimes it's like, you know, you have to wear that tough crown to pave the way for others to come behind you to have an easier walk. And that was something that was shared with me by a faculty member, my only African-American faculty member I had in my master's program, shared some things like that when I was experiencing a whole lot of microaggressions and racism, call it what it is, and the power of privilege. So that's a whole nother story right there, Malik. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It is, people don't know, a lot of people don't know what it's like to be that only one in the room. And it's not a good feeling sometimes. It's a lot. So I concur with you wholeheartedly.
Is ageism the proper term? I feel like I just made that up.
It is a proper term.
It is the proper term, but interestingly, people usually refer to it on the other end, that you're older than is expected. But there is that concept there that your age relates in some way positively or negatively to the outcome is definitely, and how people treat you is definitely a concept that, you know, is out there.
And Dr. Mevin, that is a great point, because sometimes it's viewed, even here, I know it's not, and I see colleagues across campus when we were face-to-face, people always assume that I was a student, even here, when they see me on campus, it's just like, then I get the question like, you're like about what? There's like, I'm not trying to be, then there's the candidates like, I'm not trying to be, you know, for, and I was like, I understand, but I'm like, it is kind of an ageism thing, because if I ask the question the other way, I'm like, you're kind of up there. Then somebody's like, that's automatically a disrespect, right? So it's just like, so try to put the shoe on the other foot. Somebody's like, oh, it's a compliment. to you, it may be a compliment, but for me, this kind of may be like an insult, but we don't often see it that way. So we have to kind of flip that narrative a little bit about ageism, because my mentor used to say that all the time when I was the assistant director of an MSW program in Jersey. People at the university used to always say, like, "You're how old?" He was just like, "That's not appropriate for you to ask that question." And it's like, "Oh, it wasn't like that. It was like a compliment." But, you know, kind of what you said is, it is what it is. We just have to, you know, share our experience.
Yeah, it's like conscious bias masked by a question. You're not supposed to have a PhD because you look young is their narrative. But kudos to you for breaking those barriers, looking young and having those degrees and publications and presenting at symposiums, things of that nature, and breaking down those barriers. So some of those students that you're mentoring in the DSW program can also break down barriers in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So to bring it like full circle with the podcast, what would you say, what would be your advice to those students? To the African-American male, we can talk about the ageism part. We can talk about just in general, not seeing people that look like you. What is your advice to making and helping them achieve their career goals?
Very good question, Malik. I'm having to pause for a second because I work with those seniors. My students, when they first meet me, they will probably say, "Oh my God, he is the worst. He is so hard." And then by the end of the year, they're like, they can't stay away out of my office. And I do that because I tell my students, not really, this is like an emotional part. I really want the best for them. That's one of the reasons why I'm here. And I really want to push them to reach their max. I think purpose in life is if you've been a graduate of HBCU, we're taught to give back. And I want to inspire that into the students. I want them to have that connection to the university, because you have to understand the shoulders that we stand on of why this university is here. So my advice to my students when they enter my classes, come in with an mind and you put your all into your work, because you never know where you may be. I may be looking at the next senator, governor, or the next leading researcher, and I come into each class with that mindset. One thing that I tell my students is like, bar is up here. And you have to meet that. I'm not lowering that standard. And they was like, "Am I being difficult? Am I being hard?" I want them to be that Spartan scholar that's gonna go out and be the next star for us. So my advice to my students is always put your best foot forward and let's rock out. Let's go.
That was great. What you said about how they probably think you're the hardest person when they first walk in, I think that's good, because, I mean, you know, everybody says this, don't be comfortable being comfortable. You know, sometimes you have to be uncomfortable. And I think it's important that, and this probably needs to happen more. So even on our campus, I appreciate you doing it, but it probably should happen more across the campus, is that because we're at HBCU, there's the other side to it of us seeing people that look like us, we're comfortable. And those professors or our mentors sometimes are reluctant to be hard on us. They let things, you know, slide past. We navigate, we coast through our 4 years getting our undergraduate degree. And what's going to happen is, and it happens now from, you know, a lot of students, HBCU, PWI, wherever you go, is that when you graduate, then what? Mm-hmm. You go to these different backgrounds. So a lot of students, for instance, you get your bachelor's at HBCU, you're probably going to go to a different institution for your master's.
Right.
And you were really comfortable during the bachelor's program because that was the narrative. And then now that has just switched up and you're lost. So kudos to you for not staying that course. But I think, I mean, that just describes you as an individual, obviously, you know, pushing your best foot forward regardless of the circumstance of their environment.
Absolutely. And those are two things when students that enter my class, I have them for a whole year, which is something I actually love here at NSU. So, and I tell them when they come in, I give them, tell them to pull out a scrap piece of paper. I said, "What are you going to do? Are you going to graduate school or employment? Which one? Pick one." And everyone has to give an answer. We don't leave that class that day until I know everyone's goal. It's one or the other. And then we work towards that. each for the whole year. I have them, they meet with a career center. They have to before they come into my class. Your resume has to be together. Your statement has to be together before you enter. And then we push forward. So with that, Malik, my track record here in SU, like currently right now, I have 17 seniors in my class. And out of the 17, 10 have already applied to graduate school and 8 have already been accepted. And 2 and 4 of the others, they're waiting to hear back, but they're going to be accepted. I just know they are. So that's my goal, because I feel as though as an instructor, I am not doing my part if I don't hold the line of saying we need to have a standard of where you're going. And we, and my students, we have those one-on-one meetings in the evening, in the morning, figuring out what it is they want to do. Either it's interviewing or they're going into graduate school. So that's kind of like my goal for in the classroom for our students. And they know that's what my expectations are. And we're doing pretty good so far.
I heard you mention the Career Center. So let's talk about really quickly some tools we may have on campus to help students navigate those colleges. So I know we have, like you said, the Career Center. Are there some other things on campus or even inside your program that students should be taking advantage of?
Yes. So part of the application to get into the practicum experience, I have students, they have to go to sign up for an appointment with the Writing Center, the Career Center as well. So actually the Career Center helped me with my student interviews for students entering my class. They are so amazing. And so is the Writing Center. And then if students need to have extra support or whatever, students can go into the counseling center. So since I've been here, I've worked with almost seem like everybody on campus. I just made my rounds, and my students have to touch bases with all supports on campus in order to make sure we have a well package. So when they get to their year, like right now, my students are coasting. They're just like, there's like, hey, Dr. D, my resume is ready. My cover letter is ready. Just hit send. Recommendation letter, boom, hit send, because we have already worked on that as the year go. So it's easy for them. It's nothing like when we have openings that get sent to me from across around the United States or whatever, all my students will say, oh, I'm interested or not, apply and keep it moving, because we have already did the front work in the fall semester. That's when they're like, oh, I hate him so much because I'm working so hard. But then in the spring, it's like they're coasting because it's like, oh, we got this. It's nothing now. So that's how it is. I might be falling out of the professional language, but that's just how I am in class, though.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Dennerson. We have really appreciated you joining us, especially as a relatively new faculty member. And all the things that you were saying relate so much to the podcast. So I hope you encourage your students to listen to the podcast as well, because we have a session about the Writing Center. We have a session with some of the counselors talking about meditation, you know, all of those things to help our students to be proactive in, you know, connecting with both advice, connecting with folks on campus, as well as connecting with tools. So we really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And yeah, all those resources are helpful. Even the support staff for students for accommodation. I work with everyone.
They are Oasis.
Oasis. Oh my gosh, they're so helpful. They are very helpful with looking over things to make sure documents are together and inclusive. Yeah, Dr. Mebbin, since I've been here, it's such an inclusive environment. And everyone is so willing to help, whether you're faculty or a student. And I just love that. That's not a plug for anybody. It's just my experience has been amazing with every office that I name has been. They have phenomenal job.
Well, thank you. And again, it all starts with our faculty. So thank you for being, you know, an inspiring sort of open-minded faculty member who, as Malik said, holds the students to the standard that they need to succeed. So again, we really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you again, Dr. Dennerson. I could have talked all day. This is probably, in my eyes, this has been my favorite episode thus far. I enjoyed this one. I could have talked all day.
Next Up Student Success was created by Dr. Felicia Mebbin with theme music by Dr. Cheryl Mebbin, and is presented by the Office of Academic Engagement at Norfolk State University. For more information about our production team, hosts, and past episodes, go to nextup-studentsuccess.org. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Okay, so Dr. Dennerson and Malik, what are you most looking forward to doing once the pandemic is over?
I would say not having to wear a mask. I know that's probably, and granted, I don't know how long it'll be until that happens because they have vaccinations, but people don't want to get vaccinated. Yeah, no, I just can't wait to not have to like, oh God, I forgot my mask. Think about
that. That's a good point. That's one thing.
And then secondly, going to like a water park, because we talked before that time, I love swimming. And yeah, I can still swim in a regular pool. Yeah, that's cool. That's exercise. But that's not fun all the time. I want to go to a water park. But yeah.
Well, Malik, I concur with the mask thing. I just want to be able to go to a sporting event. I'm a big sports person. I hope and pray that we can have football in the fall, so I can just go to a Spartan football game or an A&T football game. I just want that so bad, but you know, patience is a virtue. So I mean, following all the rules, but I just want to go to a football or a sporting event in general, mm-hmm. whether it's football, basketball, WNBA, NBA, somebody, something. I just want to go.
But we have a good bowling team. You can go to the A&T Norfolk State football game. That would just cover it all. There you go.
I attended when it was here, and I went to the band battle in the gym. I remember that when I was in undergrad as well. Mm-hmm. When Norfolk State used to travel to A&T for the it's an experience. The HBCU experience is something that you just can't sell or market. It's just, yeah.
It's unique. So as a matter of fact, again, my mom graduated from A&T, and when Norfolk State was at A&T for the football game, they did the Battle of the Bands in Greensboro Coliseum, and she and I went. That might have been about 2 years ago. So it's been since I've been here, and I came to Norfolk State in 2017. And that was amazing because they had some stepping and some, you know, all these other things. And there were just thousands and thousands of people. It was totally amazing.
I was there as well. So I said, that was fun. I was at the same event that you were.
Yes.
Who do you root for? Like, is that like, oh, I'm sitting next to a colleague. Do I say Norfolk State or do I say Aggie? Which one?
Oh, there are rules.
There are rules. I teased my students the week before when we were in person. I said, and actually that's when I had our former SJ president in my class, Lynn. I actually wore an A&T cardigan to class, and they gave me so much flack for that. I said, you know, I love my Spartans. I said, but I'm an Aggie at heart.
And that's the rule. So you do have to represent your alma mater undergraduate, okay? And then for every other occasion, you root for where you are.
Absolutely.
That's the rule. And you have to take the flat. That's the other rule. So I agree with you guys. I really am looking forward to not even having to think about who I'm around. You know, go to the grocery store, go wherever, and not look at people with their mask below their nose and under their chin and giving them the side eye. I'm looking at not having to do all that. And I think now that spring is here and summer is coming, I really want to go to an outdoor concert, you know, to an amphitheater where you can be close to people. And it's not even about being outside. I just want to go to a musical event again, whether it's, you know, and have a lot of people around and enjoy yourself and cheer, whatever.
And the band and playing and practicing out there outside my office would be, I'm like, I want to hear that again.